Mr. Etkin, reel 4. At the end of the last reel, Mr. Etkin, you were just telling me how your mother had objected when your father suggested that you and he leave Lodz and go towards Warsaw.
Yes, she suggested that my older brother should go with him. By then, Jews were not allowed to travel on public transport. And somehow, my father and few other men managed to bribe some officer, some German officer, who promised, I don't know, in exchange for what, I don't know whether some jewelry or what was the price that he received, was going to take 12 men to Warsaw in a van. And it was in February 1940 that my father and my older brother left. And the idea was that when they find some accommodation in Warsaw, they would write to us or contact us in some way, and then we would somehow try to join them. But that was the last time I saw my father and my older brother. And for quite a number of weeks, we didn't get any postcard or any we had no information whatsoever.
So they actually went off to Warsaw in the van?
No, but they didn't go to Warsaw. But we only heard about it after the ghetto was open. We got a postcard from Kielce, which is quite many, many miles south of Warsaw.
What happened to them?
What happened to them? The officer, for whatever reason, decided not to go to Warsaw, but there. It wasn't explained. The postcards that did arrive were simply that they were in Kielce, in the Kielce ghetto. That was when the Lodz ghetto was opened, but that was already... The postcards we started receiving were in May 1940. And by then the ghetto was being formed.
Did you carry
and being
on?
Closed.
We
never, no, we never, by then it was impossible to join them.
And you never saw
we
them?
Were separated, no. There was only correspondence. See, from that time until 1941 we were corresponding.
And then did you know why the correspondence stopped?
No, I didn't know. I learned in 1941. Well, in 1943 we already knew that most of the ghettos were liquidated.
So you never saw your father or your brother alive again?
No.
How did your mother cope after your father and your brother had left?
One of our uncles who lived next to us, the same block of flats, watchmaker and a jeweler, and suddenly his stock was worth quite a lot of money, and he managed somehow on the black market to obtain food, and he was helping us.
By this time, had you already heard that the ghetto was imminent, and what did you know of what a ghetto was?
In about either beginning of March or thereabout, 1940, notices appeared that a ghetto will be formed in the part of Lodz. And my uncle, who was very enterprising, he went into the ghetto area and he found a room, a large room, on the third floor of a big tenement block. The notices appeared that from such and such date, I think sometime in April, all the Jews living in other parts of Lodz, of Litzmannstadt, would have to move into the ghetto area.
Did this cause a lot of panic, people?
Well, few days... not to start with, but few days before the date, there German soldiers or policemen, to us they all look the same, they went into flats and tenements where the Jews lived near Piotrkowska, near the sort of more expensive areas, and they shot maybe 200 people in order to stampede and panic us into going into the ghetto. And from there on, you could see hundreds or if not thousands of people. The snow was still on the ground, and the only transport was sledges or hand-driven carts. We were men and women and children pushing bedding in the direction of the ghetto. And obviously, my uncle, who found one large room, it was him, his wife, who was the younger sister of my mother, and his two children, and then there was my mother with us, three children. We moved into one room, and that was quite, you know, can you imagine moving from an apartment of four or five rooms, four bedrooms, into half a room?
What kind of things did you take with you?
Bedding. This was most important. Some utensils. You only could take very few furniture you couldn't take. And there were notices that the furniture has to be left in good order, and anybody who does any malicious damage will be severely punished. And I remember my mother giving for safe keeping to one of the women who used to work for us as a maid before the war, giving cases of curtains and other things for her, so that after the war we would be able to take it back. And after that went on for 3 weeks before the ghetto. And then I remember my mother saying, oh, I forgot, it may be useful to take such and such blanket. And when she asked her, oh, can you bring that blanket back, there was sort of expression changed on her face, and saying, oh, no, you didn't give me that. I cannot bring it. This, you didn't give it to me. And my mother realized it, and I realized it, that the woman was just taking it away, and we would never see it back.
How did this make you feel?
Well, just well, not a very pleasant feeling, but there was nothing you could do about it. You couldn't go to the police and complain.
Were the Polish people in any way sympathetic?
No, no. Even before, you see, I could have walked without... By then we had to have two stars on the right-hand side, yellow stars, instead of the armband. And I would have dared to walk without it, but I was afraid that some Polish boy would point out to a German, oh, there is a Jewish boy walking without the stars. Because the German couldn't tell whether I was Jewish or not. But the Polish boy, in 99 cases out of 100, could tell. And I was afraid of those Polish boys my age, a year younger or a year older, who would go to the German. He couldn't speak German, but he learned the word Jude and pointed at me. And that was the fear. And these things happened.
The area that was marked out to be the ghetto, what kind of an area was that?
It was the poorest area where many Jewish people lived before the war. It was adjoining the Jewish cemetery. It was like the East End of London, for example. And I would say that maybe half of the Jewish population lived in that area before the war, and the other half had to move in there in very poor condition, very cramped conditions. In addition to that, a number of streets where the tram cars were to pass, which were not for the ghetto use, those streets had to be evacuated completely so that nobody lived in an apartment that was overlooking those streets where the tram cars are driving. Therefore, you had a population of quarter of a million, or thereabout, squeezed into an area where there should have been less than 100,000, maybe 80,000. And those 80 would have lived in very cramped conditions to start with.
Was there any kind of organization for allocating space in the ghetto?
Yes, Rumkowski was released by then, together with his 10 advisors, and they were very, before the war, they were textile manufacturers, very, very capable and energetic men. And Rumkowski, together with those men, immediately formed a kind of self-government. There was Polish police, Jewish police was formed, police force, a Jewish post office, fire brigade. There were one hospital, there was another hospital, schools. There was immediately a very competent organization formed. The Germans insisted on it. They wanted a few Jews to be in charge so that they could give orders.
Was it called a Judenrat?
Judenrat.
Did they use the name?
Judenrat, yes. It was the Jewish... like the Board of Deputies here.
What you called it?
In Polish you would say Gmina, that was the Polish name before the war, but during the war it was called the Judenrat.
Was Rumkowski?
Rumkowski.
Was he self-appointed? How was he?
Well, the story goes, he was in the, before the war, he was a sort of a charity worker. He was collecting money for Jewish orphanages. And he would go, he was not a young man, he must have been 63 or 65 when the ghetto started. And he looked a bit older even than that. And before the war, he would go from one, you know, wealthy manufacturer to another and collect money for Jewish orphanages, which was a charitable organization. And some people gave more and some people gave less. And so he was known, probably, to those, you know, wealthy Jewish people. And the story goes that when the Germans arrived, a few weeks after they've arrived, they went into the Jewish Gmina, like the Board of Deputies in here, and said, who is the oldest? That is, the oldest and who is in charge is a similar word. Who is their älteste? And the joke, whether it is a joke or whether it was true, that he jumped up, thinking who is the oldest in the room, and saying, I am. And they said, fine, you are in charge. Appoint 10 or 12 or whatever number of assistants. And then they were arrested and they were kind of frightened. One or two were shot and they were terrified, so that they must obey and do exactly what they are told and pass the information lower down. And he was nicknamed the King of the Ghetto.
Did the inhabitants of the ghetto resent the Judenrat, did they?
No, at first it was a relief. At first, when we went into the ghetto, you felt a kind of relief. You could walk in the streets without being afraid that a Polish boy will come in and point out you're a Jew, that a Hitlerjugend will come in and tell you to go and do something, that this German soldier will come and grab you and you won't come back. So at first it was a kind of a relief. You were walking on very crowded streets, lots and lots of people. You were living in a room where there was just enough room for beds. To start with, there was either I wasn't hungry, maybe because of my uncle. And somehow, at first, it wasn't too bad.
What was the general mood in the ghetto? Were people
the
trying
mood
to be
at
happy?
First? Well, first of all, Jews are great optimists. When the war started, everyone was saying, well, by the spring of 1940 it will all be over. When the ghetto was open, oh well, another 2-3 months and everything, the war will be over, and not to worry. There were rumors the Russians were parachuted 5 miles near there and we will soon be liberated. So all the time you had those kind of hopeful, misleading messages that somebody invented.
So when you initially went into the ghetto, you felt a sense of
initially
security?
Sense of security. The schools opened.
Did you return?
My mother, I did not return because it was the holidays were about to start. I did not go back, but my mother began to teach. My younger sister went to this sort of gymnasium. I don't know why I didn't, because I didn't attend school in the ghetto for the short time. But I remember my younger sister did, and I remember that my mother started to teach. And there were talks that now the main language will be Yiddish, and there were all kinds of hopeful signs. And then what happened in the ghetto? Various workshops sprang out. The laundry department, the shoemaking department, the tailoring factories.
Were these services
for the Germans. And Rumkowski with his men immediately started setting up all kind of workshops that the Germans would need, and therefore we will be able to get food in exchange for it. And the drive was for everybody who could to start working in those places.
What did you do?
Well, what happened, my mother, being a teacher, got accommodation together with us in a... We were looking for better accommodation than we were in. And all the teachers from the ghetto got an accommodation in what used to be a Polish convent before the war and a Polish school. And our accommodation was not much better than the one that we were sharing with my uncle. It was a large sort of gymnasium hall, an assembly hall, which was subdivided into 20 cubicles with sort of blankets and just enough room for beds, for the 4 beds that we needed, and the cooking facilities were at one end of the assembly hall, where you could queue up and boil your milk and
how many people would share those cooking facilities?
Well, maybe 20 families in one on one big assembly hall, and then there were some others, and others maybe had slightly better accommodation. But there was a very large garden and playing fields in the area, and that was the summer, 1940. And I remember spending that summer playing volleyball and table tennis with groups of young people. And that summer was quite a, comparatively speaking, the summer of 1940. I was 15 years old. There were many boys and girls slightly older than I was. And I was all day playing volleyball and table tennis and doing a bit of gardening. We were planting vegetables. And until September 1940, I was not hungry, and I would say those few months were quite pleasantly spent. Now and then you heard a shot and someone was killed near the barbed wire, the enclosure of the ghetto, but I didn't go out much. And although it was summer holiday, my mother was somehow involved in teaching, because teachers don't have 3 months holidays, because they had to prepare and do all kinds of things. And those 3 months, and letters, postcards started coming from my father, from Kielce, and my older brother, and they were in the ghetto there.
Did they give you any news of that ghetto? Did it sound similar to yours?
The only news was that my older brother was working in a stone quarry, which was not a very good news, you know, that life was hard, but they were still alive.
Had your mother been depressed at all at not having heard from your father? And did these postcards make a big difference to you?
Yes, the postcards started coming about 6-8 weeks after they left, which was just in between when the ghetto was formed. But there was so much, every day there was so much to do. And my mother didn't sort of talk to me so much about it. I was sort of with younger people, so I didn't sort of sit down and start talking to her about it. So I'm not able to say exactly what she felt about. She didn't sort of give me the bad news. She wasn't trying to depress me. So even if she heard things that I didn't, she would didn't see any point in.
Was there any stage when you were obliged to register for work? Did the Germans at any stage come in and take people out to work outside the ghetto?
No, there were. Well, the Germans from time to time asked Rumkowski for 500 Jewish men or for, 300 and so on and so on. That went on, but I was not affected by that.
Because of your age?
I was because of my age. Neither was my younger sister, nor my younger brother.
What did you do after these summer holidays ended of 1940?
Well, what happened? Suddenly there was an outbreak of an epidemic, typhoid epidemic. And that started in September 1940. Maybe because it was of the cramped conditions that we were living in, because there was cleanliness. The ghetto was very clean. But there was an outbreak of the epidemic, and my younger brother died within a few weeks. Then my younger sister became ill. And by then, because of the epidemic, we moved back to my uncle's place in order to nurse my younger sister. Then my cousin became ill, the girl. She was younger than I was, and she died, and my sister survived. Then I became ill, then my mother became ill, and I pulled through. And that was already...
Did your mother get better?
My mother survived and she started teaching. That was already December, January 1941, very severe winter. And by then, many people already died of typhoid, of TB, and starvation. And suddenly there was more accommodation in the ghetto, and we moved out. In January 1941, we moved out to another room in Łagiewnicka Street, which was not far away from the hospital. And I was just recovering from my typhoid. Then there was my mother, my younger sister, and myself.
What were the physical effects of typhoid? How did...
Well, how did I don't know if you know how the disease, how it works. For a week, you have a rising temperature. The normal temperature in Celsius centigrade is 36.6. And the temperature goes up to 42, which is very high temperature. The second week, the temperature stays more or less 41, 42. And at the end of the second week, there is a crisis. And either the temperature drops very suddenly, or you don't get over and then you die very soon afterwards. And of course your stomach, you're running to the toilet, you can't eat for the fortnight. And in my case, after the fortnight, the temperature drops from 42 to less than 36. And I had my nose started bleeding, really running like from the tap. And after that, I felt very faint. The hair falls out. If you go to hospital, they shave your hair. But that makes no difference whether they shave or whether the hair falls out, it grows again. And afterwards, from there on, I was very, very hungry. I recovered, but I was very, very, very hungry.
How did the ghetto cope with all the dead bodies from the people dying from all these?
Well, there were black vans with corpses running towards the cemetery. Sort of everywhere you went, you could see sometimes people were pulling those carts.